production.
You've dialed into Taking It Down, the pop culture podcast from analytical Alabama TV loving minds. We're produced by the site thealabamatake.com, where you can find more podcasts as well as musings on pop culture and a few on politics. I'm one of the hosts of Taking It Down. I'm Blaine Duncan. It's often that I find myself trying to figure out why I like what I like and why I hate what I hate. And then there's the fact that I'm also an English teacher who's always looking to see how films, TV, books, and music are put together and made. And maybe you're like me too, once a kid who grew up in front of a television set and was thrilled to the bones to get to the theater. And some other good news, mine is not the only viewpoint, as with me is an erudite musician with a penchant for reading fine literature, and that's Adam Morrow, and another host who's a media specialist who happens to be a film buff with encyclopedic knowledge on such a plethora of topics. That's Donovan Reinwald, who's actually missing in action today. We'll get to that. For this week's Taking It Down, we'll primarily talk through the first three episodes of the Apple TV Plus drama, 5 Days at Memorial, which is based around the true events of the New Orleans hospital just after Hurricane Katrina. It's also based on the book of the same name. We want to be your source for conversation or even just pals. I've often told folks to listen to the first 5 minutes, if nothing else. You never know. You could be the listener of the week. Now here he is, no Donovan, but on one side of me, the only side of me, here's a guy who keeps a camera on his garden. It's Adam Morrow with more raccoon pictures to share.
It's great to be here, Blaine.
Oh my goodness.
I miss my buddy.
Oh, Donovan. Donovan on the Cape again. Vacationing.
What a life that guy's living.
What kind of millions does he pocket in gambling every year? We'll never know.
You know, he's got a feed to the CFL going down on the coast there.
Oh, does he?
He's got to. Is that you got to kind of warm up, right, before you hit SEC season and NFL season with the CFL?
Oh, well, I figure he's probably betting on these NFL preseason games. He's probably got hundreds riding on a couple of those.
That is a level of desperation for a gambling buzz that I just don't, I can't fathom. That's pretty dark.
I can relate to it. I can relate to that, sadly. We start Dunham Real Good Listener of the Week, who will receive a dilly bar. Who's it going to be? This week, it's one of our own. Sometimes we do this. It might be a little cheating, but it's Jeremy Satcher, one of our staff writers, consistent staff writers, usually. It's Jeremy. He also is a graphic novelist on his own. You can find him at The Satchening, I think, is the_Satchening. I think he's on Instagram that way, and then Druid City Comic on Twitter. But he's also a writer for thealabamatake.com. So is it fair that he's getting the award this week? No, because last week he gave us some really good information on our YouTube channel. This show also goes up on YouTube, not just the podcast app or the sub. And he informed us about how Adam Sandler was filming, I forget the movie, but it was filming in Savannah at the same time that I had been in Savannah, so it matched our story.
Connected some dots.
He did. That was kind of cool. I didn't know that. Coming weeks, we got the Game of Thrones prequel, which is all about the Targaryen dynasty. Or is it dynasty?
Dynasty. The Targaryen dynasty. Where are you at with excitement levels on this show? Because I'm trying to think through it, you know, and I feel like if I queue it up on a Sunday evening and that music starts, I don't know if they're going to use the same music. Probably not. They're going to hint at it, right? But
yeah,
as bad as I got burned, as bad as we all got burned, I'm still going to be a little excited.
Yeah, it's hard not to. It looks good. Some of those actors are pretty good. I'm with it. I'll give it. I think I said before, I'll give it a full season, maybe two. If I drop a show like that, it would be after I gave it a long leash, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I mean, I think that was, I guess I should have said, how long is your leash on this program? Because
two seasons.
It's hurt us. They've hurt us, but it's a different, different set of folks, and like you said, good acting, and it's going to look cool at the very least.
The hurt that it was caused, though, was a lot of very specific pain, because it was, they got ahead of George R.R.R. Martin on the books, and they kind of had to go with a very loose outline, apparently. Not only are those guys not involved, it's new show, new showrunner. I read this week that HBO executive said he wanted a very different show.
I mean, part of the... that's tough, because as much as it hurt us, there was a very successful show formula in there. You know, people clearly still have an appetite for people swinging swords around and getting into some dramatic stuff, shenanigans.
This one's going to open with dragons already in the picture. In fact, I think we're going to see the decline of dragons, right? That's probably the...
Mm.
Which might be sadder. The fall of the Targaryen... What, am I saying it right? See, it's been so long since I watched
Targaryen.
It.
Yeah.
Targaryen dynasty. The fall of it could be kind of sad.
Yeah, the dragons at the end, they're kind of pitiful, right?
They peter out too, yeah. It could be heartbreaking. I don't know. We'll see. You know, I didn't like seeing the dragons CGI as they were. I didn't like seeing them get hit with arrows.
Didn't love that.
It was like they were a dog or something.
Yeah, they were very, very dog-like after watching them grow up on screen. I'm with you. I don't want to see a Sarah McLachlan commercial breakout at the end with the with the dragons kind of whittling away. I don't need that.
No CGI animals. I don't want them hurt.
No.
What else we got? Yeah, and then 2 weeks after that, I think, they pushed it back. So is it still 2 weeks? Power of the Ring?
I'm not sure.
The most expensive show ever?
It's sometime in September. That's all I know.
Okay. I think it is 2 weeks. From Amazon Prime, the most expensive show ever. Lord of the Rings fans, rejoice. It'll be here soon. I've got to watch some Lord of the Rings.
Did you...
I mean, I know the rough outline.
You mentioned in a group text that you had started watching them again, or were thinking about starting to watch them again. Mm. Did you do it?
I want to. It's the time. I got to carve out some time for it.
That one evening, it sounded like you had it like dialed up. You were asking us which version to watch, extended or regular.
Yeah. Which was the way to go for any listener who's wanting to watch those things in prep for...
I love the extended editions. I think you get some interesting extra story. But, I mean, the theatrical release, that's what did the job. Got it into the cultural consciousness and won all those awards, and they did a great job with it. So if you're limited on time, I don't think there's anything wrong with the TLDR version that's still forever long.
It's still 3 hours.
Yeah.
And then on Disney Plus, I think this week is She-Hulk : Attorney at Law. I don't know where I am on this. It's I like Mark Ruffalo's in it.
Okay.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Give me all the Mark Ruffalo you got, but... And they do seem to want to be doing the wink, wink, nudge, nudge kind of thing through this. How much... I don't know how much bandwidth I got for that. You're laughing.
I can't think of... When you said She-Hulk Attorney at Law, that sounds like an Arrested Development joke. Like...
It kind of does.
I know Tobias at one point is like trying to open a jar or something and says, oh, you'd have to be some sort of She-Hulk to get this open. And I just
and
like,
he's dressed like the Thing there for a while.
Yeah. Just the absurd levels that Marvel is at now, I think, are best understood as possibly a Bluth as a showrunner at Disney. That makes it more interesting.
This show seems to be embracing it to a degree. It had a bad teaser trailer. The CGI wasn't finished, didn't look so good. And then a month or two later, they came out with a more finalized trailer that looks better as far as CGI goes. Does it look worth a shit as a show? I don't know. I doubt it. I'm telling you, I'm hanging on for X-Men, maybe Fantastic Four, and then I might, if that's same old, I might bail. I don't know. Hard to say.
I'll give this one a shot.
Yeah, I'm probably going to have to. It's coming at a nice time where there's a couple of gaps in the middle of the week, and if it does like Disney Plus does and releases every Wednesday, it's kind of a nice spot to fill midweek.
Agreed.
Viewing.
Yeah.
What's been your viewing of late, though?
We have started, you're going to laugh at this one, the Netflix program Vikings Valhalla. It looked pretty goofy, and then I saw that it was up for some Emmys, and I thought, well, you know, it's getting a little, not to gatekeep shows via goofy award shows, but I totally did with this. Yeah. I was like, oh, let's see what it's about. So we watched an episode of that. Seems promising. I like, again, people swinging swords and being in beautiful scenery and getting into dramatic shenanigans. I'm usually here for it.
Yeah.
That was good. And then this last week, I watched the South Park Live from Red Rocks thing that they did for the 25th anniversary.
What is that?
So Mark and Trey, the creators of South Park, went to Red Rocks and convinced Primus and Ween to come and be the backing band, where they performed a bunch of the songs from the show, and Comedy Central filmed it and aired it this past Saturday night. I'm sure it'll be available for streaming soon, if it's not already. Pretty fun.
So it was just humans?
Yeah. I mean, no, they had
cartoon?
There were animations on the screens around the venue, and also, you know, it being at Red Rocks, they have the giant natural features to work with, and so they projected, you know, the characters were on the wall and had speaking parts at times, and yeah, they did some fun stuff, some fun surprises even for the folks on stage. I don't know, I like that South Park is kind of getting its victory lap in a way, and still making good stuff, I think. Not only funny, but they're still as sharp as ever with their commentary.
That is good to hear.
You know, to be 25 years making a show that just horrified my generation's parents. you know, that's good stuff. They're still kicking.
I remember it being such a big deal when I went to college and I could get South Park.
Mm.
Like, oh, I've heard of this for like a year now.
Yeah.
It had only been out 1 year, 2 years. And you could watch some of the reruns late at night, and it was a big deal. Did they skewer Trump a lot? I lost track of all this stuff.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Did they do anything with Trump?
I mean, Garrison became Trump.
Wait, what?
Yeah. Man, you've really been out of the game.
Yes.
They're
on South Park, yeah.
Yeah, it's a comfort program for me in terms of, like, you know, now that we have the years that I didn't have any form of cable, kind of before your YouTube TVs and that stuff, and just had streaming. Mm-hmm. I would lament that I couldn't just turn on my TV and there'd be something playing, that I always had to choose.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes.
And so now that I have YouTube TV, often I end up letting Comedy Central curate a collection of South Park episodes in the background of my days.
That's not a bad channel to have playing in the background most of the time.
Not at all. So we got a kick out of that, and people were just having such a good time in the crowd and on stage at that. It was a lot of fun. Then we also watched, I'm remembering now, Belfast. Finally saw that,
because
it hit streaming.
Let's get into
last
that just
weekend.
A little.
It's fantastic.
Kenneth Branagh nominated award. No, I don't think it won anything. You can correct me. But yeah, it's Kenneth Branagh, black and white film, Belfast. It's about his childhood, loosely, or maybe even not so loosely. Am I right?
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't do all of the deep dive on how biographical it gets, but it's...
I think it kind of is, though. And you loved it.
I loved it. I thought it was so good. It ended, we joke about our test here on The Take is, did we look at our phones while something was happening?
Mm-hmm.
Didn't look at the phone. It ended, and I looked up across the room at Natalie and said, that was really good. And like, we just kind of didn't say anything else about it. It's just one of those that's just about perfect.
it was up in the air on if we were going to cover it last week. We ended up not doing a show last week because August is a weird month for us on Taking It Down. And I mentioned it in the intro, I'm a teacher, so it's a really stressful, busy time of year. So we just had to cancel last week, last minute. If you missed the episode or if you thought you're going to have one, apologies. But yeah, one of the things we probably would have covered would have been Belfast. And what was so appealing to it, and this is my buddy Caleb Johnson will get a kick out of this, is when I did a search for it on HBO Max, I noticed it was like a 90-minute movie. And I was like, oh,
I love, man, a 90-minute movie.
A nice 90-minute movie. That back in the day, that when you went to the theater to see a comedy movie, it was a 90-minute movie, yeah. And you got your laughs in and you left. This is not a comedy, I don't think. Without spoiling it too much, what stuck with you? Why did you love it so much?
I think it took on a really complex issue that especially as Americans, we don't have a great sense of, at least those of us who aren't recently immigrated from Ireland, who've been here a bit longer, maybe didn't fully understand, you know, not to oversimplify things or speak in these ways, but you know, you hear people say Americans sometimes don't understand why white people fight each other in modern day, you know, like different sects of the same religion, different, you know, it's easy to understand conflict of, say, Israel-Palestine. Like, those are different, you know, obviously it's heartbreaking, and I have opinions on it very loosely held because I'm always trying to learn more, but, you know, we don't really understand why Protestants and Catholics were trying to kill each other as recently as the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s. Yeah. And so to get a fully immersive view into that was great, and to see it from a child's perspective and for everything to be stylized in that way, you know, it helped make sense of how are the troubles, how is this happening, how is this borderline open war or at least consistent terrorist threat happening in a place that's still a functioning city, you know, because a child can, if it doesn't happen right in front of them, can compartmentalize that something bad is happening two blocks away and just go to school and go home and go see their grandparents and still have this kind of small life. And it did that so well. It did the family so well. It did not just political and threat of violence kind of pressure on the family to make changes, but just socioeconomic stuff that was going to exist anyway. It was really great. I don't really know what else to, without being as general as possible.
Yeah, sure. That was good. Pretty emotionally moving, it seems as if.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, yeah. Let's do this. Let's take a break, because on the other side, it's going to be all about the Apple TV Plus show, 5 Days at Memorial. If you're new to us, you'll want to know that the Alabama Tape produces this show, Taking It Down, and that Pop Culture and Political site is on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. Follow the Alabama Take on any of those. But new to Twitter and Instagram, that's right, it is Taking It Down Us, ourselves, where we can continue the conversation with you. So follow Taking It Down Pod on Twitter and Instagram. It's the same name on both. And keep an eye out for some just random thoughts from any of the hosts of the show. What else does the Alabama Take have going? Well, besides writing several times a week that will appear on the site, it also produces another podcast, Alabama Slam, that hits airwaves every Friday morning. You'll have superfan Corey Hanna, a seasoned interviewer, and former indie wrestler Patrick Akers breaking down the big storylines in wrestling each week. There's no need for you to find anything else. They got you covered. The Alabama Take is in production with 3 other shows right now, one of them being This Song Sucks. We hope to get that one out to you, season 3, in the coming months. That's about all I can promise. Sometimes these things are bogged down by, you know, life. Subscribe to our YouTube channel if you so wish, because here's the thing, all our podcasts are there. They're in playlists. You can go and search them out. I think a few people actually listen to our shows via YouTube. That's real cool. You can always find our podcast on any podcast app or on thealabamatape.com. So there you go. Got you covered, hopefully. Lastly, visit the site, click on shop, and get yourself something that's done up real good. All right, we're back. 5 days at Memorial, developed by John Ridley and Carlton Cuse. He worked on Lost, and John Ridley is just a he's been working in Hollywood for years. Seen his name pop up a lot throughout the years. This show's airing weekly on Apple TV Plus. The first three, though, they released immediately, and they were released last Friday. And that's what we're going to talk about, those first three episodes, once it concludes their eight total. So Hurricane Katrina was 17 years ago. Does it feel like 17 years ago to you?
Yes and no. Especially watching footage now, like news, not maybe even not like from the source, but like the secondhand, like news clips or anything that can kind of contextualizes it in society. It's a little jarring how dated it looks, because it it doesn't seem like 2005 should be that long ago. I was in high school when this happened, and definitely, you know, it's a defining memory for me of that part of my life.
Yeah, if you're our age, September 11th, Hurricane Katrina, and probably going to be COVID are your big ones. None good.
No.
One thing that I just remember a lot, sticks with me, is how much the hurricane took up the screen. When they would show the weather and they would show the radar, especially the cloud cover, it took up all of the South.
Yeah.
All of it. I was at the University of Alabama at the time, and we were... That's in Tuscaloosa. That's inland quite a bit. And we were out of school for 2 days, maybe three, but a huge tree was down right on the center of campus. Parts of it are starting to slip my mind with age, but definitely some Hurricane Katrina stuff will probably always linger.
Yeah. And we were out for 4 or 5 days. I went to a county school system.
So maybe
system.
We were too.
Well, I think a big part of it was that if they can't get buses to everybody, then they don't have school. So those dirt roads far out in the county had washed out so much because of, you know, even this far inland. And not to, we definitely don't want to err on the side of making this about our experience hundreds of miles away.
No,
but just saying it was
exactly
such a big storm like you were talking about that it had a, I mean, no one at the time really made note of what happened here, even like amongst ourselves, because we understood what had happened on the coast. But you know, it did pack quite a punch for a lot of miles.
And just like the show says, for a while there was so much talk about, oh, it wasn't as bad as it could have been.
Yeah.
But shit, I mentioned this show to you and Donovan, and you jumped on quickly. Did you know it was going to be a show?
I didn't, but I'm pretty fascinated with those stories. And I mean, a lot of natural disaster stuff, but maybe being a Southern kid and thinking about hurricanes and, you know, these otherwise like beautiful places that we have along the coast, just suddenly being just one of the scariest things that nature can throw at it, just brews up out there in the water and comes ashore, and you know, all of a sudden there's a very strong before and after in your life for that. If you're one of those people that live down there, that's such a wild, basic human thing to consider. And there's been some really good stuff over the years about it. Like The Atlantic did a nice podcast sometime in the last couple of years where they kind of tracked it and even did some historical, you know, put it in reference of other storms that had passed through, and talked about the response, and interviewed a lot of folks. They interviewed a few folks who were basically my age, you know, and who they're, you know, if you were, they interviewed one woman who had all her clothes to start a private school or like some different issue, like a charter school that she was going to get to go to or something, and went for a few days, and then the storm came and she never got to go to that school. And you just see this, you know, her life would have been very different had she spent the next 3 years at this high school versus what happened and getting kind of just thrown around by the aftermath of the storm. So all those stories are, you know, I know that people who live down there and who lived through this watch the trailer of something like this show and just think it's going to be trauma porn.
Yeah.
But I think people around the country, I'm sure there's some of that. You know, when the Tuscaloosa tornado happened, the amount of people just driving around and looking was real gross. But, you know, I think there's something in decent people who want to understand and empathize with what other folks went through.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an element to the response to Katrina on like a organizational level that has to, like, that story should be kept alive. It was such a colossal human-made disaster that to not continue learning from that would be silly. So I understand this is a tightrope walk, and there's people who want no part of this, and they have every right to feel that way.
This show was almost a Ryan Murphy production instead of John Ridley. And you want to talk about unable to walk a tightrope. I think it would have been really bad had he gotten a hold of it. I was familiar with the book for several years now. In fact, it sat on my shelf in my classroom. I think someone actually borrowed it and never returned it. But Dr. Haley Campbell, one of our listeners of the week, recommended it to me years ago and talked about how great it was and phenomenal the book was. You found out that the book wasn't as well received as maybe I would have guessed.
Yeah, I mean, I texted a buddy who lives in New Orleans and asked if he'd watch the show or was going to watch the show. And I said, I know the book. People have problems with the book because I'd been kind of surfing around on Reddit as I'm wont to do. But he said, you know, everybody's got problems with everything here. It's a very, people are defensive of their own and the image that's portrayed of New Orleans, and for good reason. But I know that, you know, you can get on the New Orleans subreddit, and people, obviously, they can do this behind the
anonymity.
Yeah, I was trying to, they're not being verified, but I don't know what would compel people to, I mean, who knows why they would lie about that, but folks weighing in and say they actually have worked, they're in the medical field and have worked with some of the people that are on screen now, or they are now colleagues with, say, some of the nurses who were in the ICU when all this was going down, and they had problems with, was it Cheryl Fink? Fink is the woman's name who wrote it. Wrote the book that she was, maybe even when Ida came, she showed back up, like kind of fingers crossed that something was going to go wrong so she could get a story.
Mm.
That's their take on it. Who knows the truth, but you know, you can understand why, if somebody's going through like a tremendous amount of pain and it's something they have PTSD about for years, that you kind of view anybody who's writing as someone doing it in an exploitative way.
But has it ever been disproven what she wrote? Is any of it not true or something?
I guess it's all, they have problems with, I mean, you can write the same facts two different ways.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I don't know enough about the story to weigh in. I think the show is going to get into, I mean, dive head first into the gray area of what happened, and hopefully some of the, not just what happened the day on those days, but, you know, it was played for political points in different ways and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But it is weird to think about. I mean, did it cross your mind at all that, while watching it, that these are people, some of whom are still, you know, working in hospitals? Because like you said, it's only 17 years ago. It's hard to forget.
Yes, one of the big things I thought, we're really into the show now, so if you, maybe this would be our spoiler, though.
Okay.
You know, how much can you spoil? My thought was, you know, they got the first NICU baby on the helicopter, and I thought, I wonder if that kid's alive, if that 17, 18 year old.
I tried to look it up. I couldn't find anything.
Yeah. That is harrowing. Any parent who's had a kid in the neonatal ICU, I've been there. It's I can't fathom putting the child on a helicopter and just not knowing. Just It was that's kind of a rough thing to think through, and this show does that to me, and I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing, where you just question yourself and you say, would I know what to do? Would I survive? Would I have the energy to be awake for 24 hours? Would I give up? This show did that to me a lot.
That scene where they are desperately trying to get that first child up onto the helicopter pad was so well done.
Mm-hmm.
And you're thinking there's a lot left for all of its show. There's a lot that they don't explicitly talk about, that you're carrying this kind of mountain of emotion with it. Like this one, four hospital staffers get this child to the helicopter, and then one nurse gets in to perform this highly specified medical, whatever you have to do with a child that's going through that, and she disappears, which means they've already, where's the child going? Not, who's to say, you know, somewhere better than where it is, but where's the mom? Where are the parents? Where's mm-hmm. the family? Mm-hmm. All of these things you're kind of thinking about in your head behind, even though you're only seeing them struggling in that heat up those stairs. And they don't shy away from the show part of storytelling. I was trying to remember if there has been a film or TV, anything that has dramatized the levee break like this did.
I don't think so. And the CGI of it, you know, I guess there was no real footage of that actually happening in real time. But this is where I think CGI can be really good, and the fact that it's advanced gives you a visual of what that would have been like. There's plenty of shots of the dome, being the roof of the dome being ripped apart. Plenty of shots of that the floodwaters coming in at a fast rate, and it helps. And you're right, that's upping the ante on storytelling, of course. But I feel like it doesn't do it in a way that's like an action adventure movie at all.
No,
like there's never a moment where you're thinking, oh, okay, The Rock's going to fly in on this helicopter and
and
save everyone. It's done to help give you a visual and to crank up the dread, because that was exactly what they were going through. I haven't seen it be, I guess exploitative might be the word, but I haven't seen it really do that. Everything they're doing is in an effort to scare you as a viewer, like they were scared, I suppose.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think I thought that was a very powerful shot that they used, and I thought the visual of after the National Guard comes to him and says, you got a wall of water coming this way. I think sometimes a flood is one of the tougher things to like understand the dread of. You see the end result, right? But like a tornado comes through, horrifying. The wind, shooting things through the windows, that was terrifying to watch. Wildfire, all these things. But a flood is kind of like the water slowly gets higher. Yeah. But when that water was pushing that car and pushing all that debris towards the hospital, it's like, this is for real. This is some high stakes, scary stuff. And then you have the classic guys almost in the boiler room of the ship, you know, trying to keep it from going under with the maintenance crew down there fighting that wall of water. I don't know. That was all. I mean, I feel like you have to have these things to tell the story, right?
Yeah, I think so, too. Boy, there's quite a juxtaposition going on with the smiling faces on the posters in the office in Dallas of the elderly people hugging.
Yeah.
It really gives you the sense, without berating you about it, that this is once again one of those problems with money, with monetizing healthcare, you know. In a way, you can't help a natural disaster, although one of this magnitude, maybe years ago you could have. But you know, it's these guys are in there trying to earn a dime. Maybe they do make it a bit too ham-fisted when he says, is this good for our money? Is this good for us to make money? And they say, yeah, because you know, a lot of people are going to need a hospital and we're going to provide that care for money.
Yeah. I mean, that was that client. I thought they broached that. If you're going to do something as ham-fisted as that, having some asshole on a golf course in a client meeting asking in Dallas, of all places. It's like, yeah, sorry to anyone who's listening to Taking It Down out there in Dallas, but they picked a fine city to do that scene in. I mean, I know that's where the guy was, but I thought his arc, using him as a guy caught in what is very clearly the bad guy part of the mm-hmm. equation, but him being a decent person. And I mean, I got to think those emails that are getting sent back and forth are, I'm sure they have those emails, you know, that has to be on the record. So that's probably really what was going down.
I bet so. Then you get we have military thousands of these helicopters, and you're thinking to yourself, me as a viewer, the way I was viewing it was, why aren't there more helicopters? Why aren't they saving lives? Why weren't they brought in much more quickly? Why do we have these organizations in our country if not to protect us or to help us? Are they solely to make war? Are they, you know, what's that say about our society? And that part was not as ham-fisted, and I felt like it made an argument there too.
They did a good job of, again, focusing so much on the people on the ground. You know, like I was struck by, say, the helicopter, the military guy who gets out of the helicopter, young guy who says we can take one person, and that's when they choose to send this child mm-hmm. with this nurse. You know, that guy is just trying to do his job, you know, and trying to keep the helicopter in the air and trying to help as many people as possible. Yet he has to be this kind of gruff person to keep that mission afloat. And they're doing such a, like you said, you can't help but imagine, how would I hold up in all of these mm-hmm. scenarios? And almost everybody who comes on screen, you're able to, in a subtle way, peel back and think, like, what's going on with them? You know, nobody is one-dimensional. Mm-hmm. It helps that most of the key players are actual humans who have given lengthy interviews. So it's they're not inventions. You know, a writer didn't come up with them. They really are people with complex histories and motivations and experience.
They're doing one thing with the show. They're using a lot of close-ups to tell the story, which I think humanizes them even more, perhaps. It's an interesting choice to have that many close-ups in a disaster sort of show. I was kind of shocked at how many of the cast weren't just flat-out stars. You'll have Vera Farmiga, who was... she's somewhat of a big star, but the rest of the cast is kind of... You might recognize them, but you don't really... No big name carrying the show. W. Earl Brown, it plays the somewhat ruthless doctor carrying the gun around. I know him from Deadwood and There's Something About Mary. He was in that movie.
Okay.
You know, yeah.
Good callback
but
there.
Kudos to them all. Kudos to them all and the director making everyone look so miserably hot.
Yeah.
Not to be flippant, but that is something that you and I can relate to. And when I think I get, my temperature probably rises immediately just watching the show when they're out there without air conditioning and trying to load up people and they're just soaked. And that is easy to imagine for me.
Yeah, I've wondered about how they shot this because I think a lot of it was shot in Canada, if I've done my research properly.
Really?
Well, all the interiors, which was another maybe point of contention that native New Orleanians would have, given the booming film industry down there. But yeah, I mean, did they just crank the heat on these people, or were they make-upped in some way or misted before Iraq? Because they're selling it as something of an authority on sweating. They're really selling it.
This is a tale of a lot of things. It's a tale of no one knowing what to do. It's a tale of unprepared, mismanagement. And I remember all that happening in real time and everyone saying these things like, this has been mismanaged even from the top down. There's the famous Kanye thing where he said Bush doesn't care about black people. Well, that's where this came from. If you know that quote and you don't remember the context, this is it.
This is Kanye when he was good crazy, not...
Yeah, kind of...
Not
yeah.
lost the track crazy, just... Calling
exactly.
it like you saw it.
The show's also doing a framing device at the beginning of each episode where it's interviewing some of the people involved. This one stumped me. What's the point of not showing who's asking the questions? They're making it deliberate of not showing the one or two people who are interrogating the person involved. And you, as you watch the show, you forget about that because they only do it at the very beginning. Sometimes at the end, they'll circle back around to frame it up.
I mean, they're burying I think they were very intentional, since we are in spoiler land now, of building to the point of the final interview shown at the tail end of the third episode, right? That there is a criminal investigation happening.
Do you know? Do you know who the criminal investigation's on?
Yes.
By chance? Yeah, I do too. It's I won't say in case someone doesn't know, because we're only spoiling the show itself.
Yeah. So I'm really interested in where it's going, and knowing how they've treated the characters in the first three episodes, it will be intriguing to see what they do with the next few.
It is interesting how they're presenting because I know who's going to be criminally investigated, at least one of them. There might be more than one, and if so, I'll be surprised because I don't know. But I do know one, and the way that character is being presented is not really criminal.
Right. I know some of the controversy is making an impossible moral decision. Like what we're talking about the show's ability, its flex has been making us think, what would I do in that situation? About every micro decision so far, it's leading us to like one of the great moral debates of modern time, right? In a way.
Oh, is it? Well, I all I know is who. I don't know the one.
Okay.
I heard that it's pretty traumatizing in a way, I guess. But
yeah.
That it's really haunting, I guess. I've used that word earlier, but I'll say it again. I don't remember watching a television show of late that had me wanting to go immediately to the next one like episode three did, though. So you get the three, and then you have to wait a week.
Yeah. That was... They kind of drop the bomb, and we want to know more and want to see how it's going to play out. I think it's really, really well done. On the interview subject, I was a little intrigued. I don't know who among these people, if anybody's passed away since then or anything like that, but having just rewatched Band of Brothers, where they use the actual veterans at the opens, of the episodes, I kind of wondered if they were going to do that maybe with some of these folks, because they are interspersing some actual footage.
Yeah, they are.
With the dramatizations. But I think it's working for me that they're using the actors.
Yeah, and I do like that they're including actual footage. So a lot of times when shows will do that, it puts me right back in there. Especially if I'm old enough to live it, you know.
It's also, I think, the other show that has done this deep a dive on this era in New Orleans is Treme. I can't think of another one that's kind of taking Katrina as head on. Somebody on the New Orleans subreddit says this makes 5 Days at Memorial makes Treme look like a Disney animated special. Not a light program. It lands some in true David Simon fashion. There is some enjoyable scene stuff, but then some real gut punches too. But even in Treme, they use an investigation to slowly unravel what happened in the storm and to illustrate the levels of confusion. It's interesting that that there is no other way to do this, I guess. I mean, I guess you could just present the story itself without those interviews, but something about showing these people, you know, in the third episode, I'm going to forget that doctor's name, but showing him sitting in a nice, you know, in front of a sunny window in his house, you assume, and a couch, and like life looks normal, but you know that this person has been through hell on earth. There is a certain level of emotional effectiveness and weight to that.
Does your knowledge about the investigation, does that come from having watched Treme or just of late?
No, it wasn't covered in that, just of late. Because honestly, the interviews had something to do with it. I was curious about who was still with us and who was still practicing medicine, and thinking about how disruptive it would be if you were somebody who, you know, if you're just one of these nurses who has put this, if not behind you, it's 17 years in your past, mm-hmm. And I'm sure mm-hmm. you have had to, God knows, amount of therapy or introspection need or faith or whatever needed to not move past it, but understand it, and all of a sudden you're on screen on a prestige television show. That would be, yeah. I can't imagine that.
Be pretty jarring, if not upsetting. So
yeah,
but we're still, I think you and I both really like this show. I think the acting is pretty good. I don't know that it's great. It could become great. Only 3 episodes down. I do look forward to watching it. We might return to it. And from there, we will leave you all to it. Hit us up. We are now on Twitter and Instagram, Taking It Down Pod at both, so you can further converse with us. So that's it for this week of Taking It Down. Find the Alabama Take on all social media and us on Twitter and Instagram for some more TV, movie, pop culture talk. And we'll talk to you next week.